J.D. Vance, he's in the debate. He's the vice presidential candidate. They got his text messages now. You know, before he was on the Trump team, he compared Trump to Hitler, said Trump was like Hitler. Hitler. Turns out in his private text messages, as late as 2020, he was saying Trump is a failure as president. But he says he has a simple explanation for why the private messages are different than the public pronouncements. He's a huge liar.
Well, there's that. Who am I to disagree?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. I had hoped today to focus on both Kamala Harris's speech last week, Friday, I believe, in Douglas, Arizona, on the border with Mexico, where the vice president and 2024 Democratic presidential nominee outlined a number of specific policies and solutions for the complex issues of both immigration reform and border security, including highlighting once again how her Republican rival, Donald Trump, successfully demanded that Republicans in Congress kill the most comprehensive border security legislation in years on the eve of its passage after hammering out an agreement with the Senate's most conservative Republicans. As she noted in her remarks on Friday, quote, he prefers to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem. She noted that the legislation would right now be surging resources to the border if Trump had not ordered congressional Republicans to vote against their own bill that was endorsed by the far-right Border Patrol Officials Union. That, even though border crossings are currently at their lowest point in years, reportedly lower even than they were during the pandemic while Trump was in office. Harris vowed, if elected, she will ask Congress to bring up the bipartisan border security bill again so she can sign it along with long overdue bipartisan immigration reform legislation to secure a legal pathway to citizenship for DACA recipients, Dreamers, and others, including those who have served or are serving in our armed forces, agriculture workers, and others. I'd hoped to detail as well Trump's pathetic response to her remarks at his subsequent rallies since then, when he decried her as, quote, mentally impaired. Yes, he called Kamala Harris mentally impaired and mentally disabled. He claimed that she has allowed 13,000 murderers to roam free in the streets of the U.S., falsely citing statistics that ICE issued last week, describing immigration statistics that go back 40 years. not the 3.5 years of the Biden-Harris administration, but 40 years, including when Trump was in office, and leaving out the part that most of those people were actually not detained by Customs and Border Patrol because they are in prison, not roaming free.
Okay, so he both called Kamala Harris, his rival, mentally impaired and incompetent, and then also lied about all of the statistics that he is now using to lie about what's happening at the border?
I know. It's shocking that it turns out Donald Trump is a huge liar about everything.
Shocker.
Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
So, you know, actually, in fact, the overall crime rate in this country, including violent crimes, including murder, has plummeted over the past couple of years. And by the way, non-citizens commit crimes at far lower rates than Americans do. So they actually lower the crime rate in this country. I was going to talk about that. I was going to play you Harris's speech, which was very good, I thought, and laid out a lot of details for her approach to immigration and the border before moving on to a bit of a preview for Tuesday night's vice presidential debate between Democratic candidate Tim Walz and Republican candidate J.D. Vance. I still hope to get to some of that. To the debate issues, along with your calls, if you would like, at 818-985-5735 on what you hope to see and expect to hear on Tuesday night at that debate, which looks like it's going to be the last debate between the Harris-Walz ticket and the Trump-Vance ticket, because Donald Trump is scared to have another debate with Kamala Harris. But I'd be love to hear from you at 818-985-KPFK as far as who you think will win or lose, what you're expecting, etc. 818-985-KPFK if you're in our live Southern California listening area or listening anywhere via our live stream at kpfk.org. But we'll have to put that back a few minutes because yet again, our seemingly unstoppable climate crisis is going to throw things off for another broadcast as millions of residents in at least 5 states are now struggling to overcome the wrath of last week's hurricane in the southeast, where earlier today, according to poweroutage.us, more than 2 million customers were without power across the region. Hurricane Helene killed and destroyed far and wide, as AP details the destruction today. From Tampa to Atlanta to Asheville, North Carolina, its high winds, heavy rains, and sheer size created a perfect mix for devastation. The storm made landfall late Thursday along a largely undeveloped expanse of pine trees and salt marshes on Florida's Big Bend coast, largely the same area, the very same area that Hurricane Debby came ashore in August. So, you know, just over a month ago, and Hurricane Idalia struck just over 1 year ago. That's 3 storms making landfall in the same spot in Florida over the past 13 months. Believe it or not, coming ashore in a rural area like that with not a lot of people, that was by and large the good news, as Helene immediately displayed far-reaching power several hundred miles away. As of Sunday night, at least 100 people across 5 states were confirmed dead, killed. Tampa Bay was inundated with a massive storm surge that sent water up to people's attics in Florida. Atlanta in Georgia got more than 11 inches of rain, more than any 48-hour period in recorded history. So many trees were toppled in South Carolina that at one point more than 40% of the state lost electricity. Floodwaters submerged a hospital in Tennessee so quickly that more than 50 patients had to be rescued from the roof via helicopter. In North Carolina, where the devastation continues today, dams were in jeopardy of failing and entire communities have been cut off by the floods. In fact, the situation in North Carolina, the farthest state, really, from where Helene made its initial landfall, well, they may prove to be the most affected by that storm. Raging floods and mudslides unleashed by the remnants of Hurricane Helene have dealt a, quote, unprecedented tragedy, unquote, in the mountains of western North Carolina, according to the state's governor, leaving at least 37 people dead in the region and communities struggling to cope without water, food, power, gas, or cell phone service. Hundreds of miles from where it made landfall as a powerful Category 4 hurricane, Helene has continued to wreak havoc. Some of the worst devastation was in the towns and cities nestled between the forested mountains of western North Carolina, with roads, power lines, and water treatment facilities heavily damaged throughout the region. Local and federal officials, along with the National Guard, racing to deliver supplies to paralyzed areas and repair and restore what they could, while dozens of other teams searched for people who fell victim to the raging floodwaters or were still looking to escape. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, at a news briefing on Sunday afternoon, said, quote, "This is an unprecedented tragedy that requires an unprecedented response." Officials say that some 460,000 people were without power in the state on Sunday, and more than 1,000 had taken refuge in 24 shelters. They are said to be currently at their max. A major disaster declaration was in effect for 25 counties in the state. In the community of Swannanoa, helicopters were dropping food from overhead at a church and a Harley-Davidson shop on Sunday. About 20 miles northwest in Weaverville, the water treatment plant was damaged by 8 feet of rainwater, according to the town's mayor. Complicating the recovery efforts was the vast number of road closures, more than 200, including Interstate 40, shut down, and damage to the water treatment facilities. In the artsy and rapidly growing city of Asheville, in a county with more than a third of the total deaths recorded to date following Helene, officials said that restoring the full water system in Asheville could take weeks. On Sunday, the volume of water in the city that had consumed entire restaurant buildings had barely receded by the afternoon, a full 3 days after the storm came ashore. All around Asheville, there was evidence of the destruction caused by Helene. Huge trees collapsed, entire stretches of roads crumbled and engulfed by rivers. You know, we've talked a lot about disasters in recent weeks and months on the broadcast and on the Green News Report. Overseas, Central Europe has seen a lot of these storms. I just want to remind folks, especially folks out here in Southern California where it's lovely, although we're heading into another heat wave. But I just want to remind folks, this is happening here in the U.S. across a bunch of states, affecting a lot of people. The New York Times writes that anxiety was visible downtown in Asheville, where people gathered in pockets looking for a bar of cell phone reception or spotty Wi-Fi to reach friends and family who had lost communication with them. At a public library, dozens huddled near as they could to the closed building to try to reach its Wi-Fi and connect, often for the first time in days, to the outside world. The manager of Buncombe County, which includes Asheville, said that clear skies were helping search and rescue crews as they canvassed the area, but she said, "We are still trying to save every single person that we can." Sheriff Quinton Miller of Buncombe County said that there were also reports of people waiting in hours-long lines for gas. Most of the few businesses in Asheville that were open were accepting only cash on Sunday. That meant that there were huge lines at ATMs with more than 100 people in a wait of over an hour. For those who were cashless, that meant scrambling to find places, handing out free meals and water. Governor Cooper said the state was urgently trying to get supplies to affected areas, would be setting up, quote, mass feeding sites. In many communities where water systems were shut down, residents were urged to boil water or use bottled water if they could find any. Magda Randolph, 72 years old, she's lived in Asheville for some 24 years. She says she has never experienced a flooding event this powerful, and she wondered about the long-term impact, saying, quote, "Our water system is greatly compromised. Our landfill got compromised. It's unclear what the quality of life is going to be like here for a while." That, I think, is a revelation that maybe a lot of folks, I hope, are beginning to realize as these storms continue to become more frequent, more destructive, and spin up, seemingly out of nowhere, a lot quicker over the record warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Now, there are some electoral issues related here that I want to get to in a moment, particularly in North Carolina, the very closely divided state of North Carolina. This is going to have an effect on the election, which is now just over a month away, with vote by mail starting much sooner, at least in theory. But Desi Doyen, I wanted to touch base with you, your takeaway from yet another monster climate change fueled storm before many affected areas had even had a chance to recover from previous storms this season.
Yeah, that has been basically the defining feature of these accelerating impacts of climate change, not just in the United States, but around the world. As you mentioned, the catastrophic flooding in Central Europe a couple of weeks ago, 4 days, the most rain ever received in Central Europe on record for an intensity of rainfall and flooding that they experienced
just,
over there.
Yeah, and coming, by the way, just was it a week or so ago that North Carolina got hit with a record rainfall themselves, 10 inches in a day or something like that.
Yes. And so Asheville, for example, I think is a big signpost of the fact that we are not ready. Asheville, by some measures, was considered a climate haven, a place where people could go in order to have fewer, lesser impacts from climate change because it had mild summers. So it didn't have these 100 degree summers. So Asheville was considered a great place to be.
Uh-huh.
And it hadn't had catastrophic flooding like this ever before. So it was a climate haven. It isn't actually now. And that has underscored other activists' notation that no, there is no place that is going to escape these climate impacts.
No place is safe.
And it really does underscore the U.S. is not ready for these accelerating climate impacts. We've got catastrophic flooding occurring in new locations that are not accustomed to it. Now, Biden's Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law did put forth hundreds of billions of dollars to upgrade roads and bridges and the electric grid, dams and water systems for resilience against climate impacts. But, that's a start, but those will take time to build, and much more funding is going to be needed, as we can see from this. For example, Duke Energy, the primary utility company in North Carolina, said 360 electrical substations are out, either destroyed, potentially beyond repair, and with ongoing supply chain issues facing the electric grid industry on having enough switching gears and enough transformers. This could take many months to resolve for North Carolina.
Now, there's a lot of money that has been put into upgrading our electrical system from the Inflation Reduction Act. But that is all going to take time before we get there, before we have hardened our electric grid and so forth.
Exactly. This is going to take years.
Yeah. And so we're talking about people who right now need help, who right now need water, who need electricity and so forth.
Yes. And of course, we should note that the National Guard and the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, are on site in all of these states, coordinating with state and local responders in order to make sure that there is enough rescue, search and rescue going on, and then the immediate recovery and how to repair after that.
Well, that's good, because I don't know if anybody's paid attention to Donald Trump's Project 2025, but he wants to get rid of FEMA. Actually, not get rid of it, just move it from the Department of Homeland Security over into the Interior Department, which just late last week he called for doing away with the Interior Department as well. So, do you like FEMA? Do you think they ought to be there when it's a storm like this? Well, then think about that when you go to vote this year. Also, by the way, Donald Trump wants to get rid of NOAA. The Weather Service, the Hurricane Center, get rid of it, privatize, let it be privatized, let FEMA be privatized. Why should the taxpayer have to pay for all of these things? Let's let some big corporations, sure Elon Musk will be happy to run FEMA from his own company.
I just want to clarify one small thing. Taxpayers will still pay for the data gathering that the National Weather Service and NOAA do.
Yeah.
It just means that the actual weather forecasts will be privatized.
Right.
So you'll pay for for the data. You'll pay for the scientists as a taxpayer, yeah. but you'll have to pay then for what the free weather forecasts that you are getting now.
Well,
so that is one aspect of just one chapter in Project 2025 that calls for dismantling the National Weather Service and NOAA. Now, one of the things that's important to remember is that, for example, in Florida, when it comes to the electric grid, as we go to air, I think nearly a million customers are still without electricity as temperatures in parts of the state are forecast to 90 degrees. And that is going to increase the risk of heat-related illness among people in these impacted areas. Humid heat is just really dangerous for
victims. When you ain't got air conditioning to do anything about it. Yeah.
And preliminary estimates of Helene's damage across the seven states is estimated right now to be $25 to $30 billion. Most of that, according to Bloomberg News, will be uninsured because most Americans don't have flood insurance, either because they didn't know that they needed it because they're not in an area that normally floods, like Asheville, or because they can't afford it. So that's going to be another aspect that a future president and Congress will have to tackle.
I had heard an estimate in Florida that it was looked like the storm was going to be about $160 billion worth of damage. Now, you know, we don't exactly know because we're, you know, barely through this storm at this point. But imagine, had $160 billion been spent on Florida on not just, climate mitigation, climate change mitigation? Had we spent that money in advance instead of continuously spending it after these storms to, you know, to build back from the destruction instead of doing something about it, instead of investing in the future, helping everyone to buy electric cars, helping to, you know, move the electric grid over.
That money might have been better spent in building resilience to climate impacts and helping to transition away from the fossil fuels that cause
this problem.
Change.
Exactly.
One other thing to be clear on is that FEMA is working on limited funds, and every year they have to cut back on their long-term recovery projects in order to use that funding to go to disaster relief. And the Disaster Relief Fund received a bit of supplemental stopgap support in that short-term government funding deal that
just last week, just days ago.
That Congress approved. But it's important to note that many MAGA congressional Republicans did vote down to shut down the federal government just days before Hurricane Helene hit.
When they knew the hurricane was coming.
Yeah, especially like Florida Representative Anna Paulina Luna.
Yeah.
Now, she ordered her followers to contact FEMA for assistance, but she threatened the assistance by voting to shut down the government just days before
hurricane
hit.
They all took to Twitter as the storm's coming in, saying, we are monitoring. My office is working closely with the federal government and local and state officials, and don't worry, we'll be there for you. Just days after voting to shut down the government entirely, these hypocrites. These dangerous hypocrites.
Right. And they are, as you note, not calling for actually taking care of the problem, using that funding in order to reduce the use of fossil fuels. They are only, at best, calling for adaptation, like Rick Scott was on CNN the other earlier today, and he won't admit what the cause is. Oh, you know, the climate is always changing, he says. But, you know, he only talk about trying to make things more resilient, trying to build more resilience.
Instead of doing something about the problem that is requiring the resilience.
Exactly.
Now, this storm comes just weeks, as I mentioned, before Election Day. In one of the most closely watched and closely divided battleground states in North Carolina, when we're talking about that, Georgia was affected as well. But particularly with North Carolina, a few concerns came to my mind over the weekend. As you recall, North Carolina Republicans have been fighting for years to implement strict photo ID restrictions for every voter at every poll. Those that law was initially struck down by a federal appeals court who found that several portions of that 2013 law were written by Republican lawmakers with, quote, almost surgical precision, according to the court. Almost surgical precision to discourage voting by black voters in the state who tend to support Democrats. Several years later, Republicans were actually successful in pushing through another version of those same photo ID voting restrictions that is now actually in effect. But what about all of those voters whose IDs were washed away in a hurricane? Do they get to vote this year, or too bad for them? Well, that will be an open question right now in a number of these states. but certainly in a state like North Carolina, which could help determine the presidency this year. On that score, Jerry Cohen, a longtime expert in North Carolina election law and a member of the Wake County, North Carolina Board of Elections, in the state's most populous and Democratic-leaning county, where Raleigh is located, he took to Twitter over the weekend to speak to some of these concerns. North Carolina, he said, has a natural disaster exemption to its voter ID law for voters who are, quote, victim of a natural disaster, according to the law. But they have to be a victim of a natural disaster under federal disaster declaration, which is certainly one has been made. One was made very quickly by Joe Biden as this storm moved in. He notes this exemption was designed for voters who may have lost their ID, but it requires them to vote on a provisional ballot, which is easier to reject after an election than a normal ballot. Oh, well, too bad. You were in a storm. You lost your ID. Maybe your vote will count. But what about absentee vote-by-mail voters, where ballots were supposed to go out several weeks ago, but thanks to a lawsuit filed by Republicans on behalf of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., those ballots were held up in order to remove his name from the ballot at the last minute, and they had to reprint millions of ballots. As Cohn tweeted on Sunday, major North Carolina U.S. Postal Service alert, all retail and delivery mail services are suspended. In zip codes beginning in 286, 287, 288, 289, and also 39 other listed post offices. Besides the human tragedy, he says, for election officials who could not place 190,000 absentee ballots in the mail until September 24 at the earliest because of an 18-day delay ordered by the vote by a vote of the state Supreme Court because of that RFK situation. So now we have the problem that some vote-by-mail ballots in North Carolina may have already gone out, but now either they can't be delivered at all or they could have been washed away out of people's mailboxes if they were already delivered before the storm. Cohen notes this is also a major potential threat to voting, especially since the GOP supermajority in the state legislature in their 2023 legislative session ended North Carolina's three-day grace period, which allowed ballots that were postmarked before Election Day to arrive up to 3 days after the election to come in via the Postal Service and still be counted. Republicans ended that. This in a state likely to be determined by a very small margin of votes either way. It's essentially tied right now, according to pre-election polling averages. And these ballots that may not show up because of this storm, well, those people may be disenfranchised. Remember also that, as Cohn notices, that county boards of elections in the affected wide swath of North Carolina cannot receive mailed absentee ballot requests right now, nor can they either send or receive absentee ballots sent via the U.S. Postal Service while all mail servers service is suspended, with no timeline yet on when it will be fully or partially restored. It's going to be a long road to determine a solution, warns Cohen. One problem other states have had in responding to such a widespread disaster is that many poll workers have also been displaced. Yes, finding enough people to man the polls in North Carolina could also be an issue there this year, thanks to our climate crisis. In a state which, for years, had gone out of its way to deny climate change even existed and to not take action to mitigate it. The previous governor ran the largest power company in the nation. So anyway, that is also true in nearby battleground Georgia and neighboring South Carolina, of course, even if that state is not considered a battleground state this year. My friend and long time, if now largely retired, election integrity expert Bev Harris also rang in on Twitter on this on Sunday to add this side note. Counties store their voting machines in low, flat warehouses. They can't easily buy more in a hurry. She goes on to list the number of counties in both North Carolina and Tennessee that are most likely at risk. Noting that there may be many more places because of 6 inches of water. Just 6 inches of water can take the machines out. Usually they have them sitting on the floor while in storage. And then she adds, hey, hand counts anyone? Maybe. We will, of course, keep our eyes on the affected areas, the battleground states or otherwise in the coming days and weeks to try and let you know what is going on and to help folks vote no matter where they are and who they may be voting for amid the ongoing disasters playing out there right now. But boy, oh boy, are we just beginning to pay the price for what we've done. All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll make a bit of a screeching turn since this is our last chance to hear from listeners before Tuesday night's vice presidential debate. Yes, everything happening everywhere all at once. The debate on Tuesday night between Republican J.D. Vance and Democrat Tim Walz is likely to be the last such debate of the cycle since Donald Trump is refusing to debate with Kamala Harris again after taking an absolute drubbing in their previous and apparently only debate earlier in September. She has agreed to another debate in October, but Trump is literally saying, no, no, it's too late to debate now, which, of course, is just ridiculous. So the Walz-Vance face-off may be all that we get as far as direct exchanges between Trump-Vance and Harris-Walz tickets this year. Unless Donald, you know, decides to put on his big boy pants. In any event, what do you hope to see? What do you expect to see in the vice presidential debate on Tuesday? Who do you think has an advantage going in? What are you concerned about? What are you hoping for? All of that. Love to hear from you. My number is 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. 5735. And while I'm happy to hear from Harris Walz supporters, by the way, I know that we got a lot of Donald Trump supporters, in this case, Trump Vance supporters in our listening audience, because y'all called me just a few weeks ago when I asked you to call in and tell me why you were supporting Donald Trump. We had a whole bunch of Donald Trump supporters calling in. So I'd love to hear from you folks as well. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I've also got some other stuff to try and get to if you don't want to call in, but I'd rather talk to you, given that we won't have that many more chances to hear from you between now and Election Day to take your temperature, to open up the broadcast to the public between now and then. So give me a call right now, 818-985-5735. Hopefully your calls are straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the broadcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hi, I'm Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! In-depth news coverage is becoming a rare commodity in today's media landscape. There's a straightforward reason. It's no longer profitable for commercial media. Serious journalism is expensive. It takes time to prepare. It requires a large and talented team of researchers, reporters, editors, and producers. That's why listener-supported news and information on KPFK is more important than ever. We continue to bring you comprehensive coverage from skilled, dedicated journalists, because you continue to support the work we do here all year round. Please continue to support KPFK, all the vital work that's done at this Pacifica station. Call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK, and join the KPFK Sustainer Circle, or you can give at kpfk.org.
Welcome to KPFK. established in 1959 on the Pacifica Radio Network, a broadcast service of, by, and for the people. 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and 99.5 Ridgecrest, China Lake. People Power is on your radio.
Mac, it's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Would love to hear from you. Dan Sebastian on the Twitters, where you can find me at TheBradBlog, has some criticisms for me. Hey, Dan, give us a call, 818-985-5735. Love to put you on the air, 818-985-KPFK. CBS announced over the weekend that the vice presidential debate moderators Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell will not correct any lies when vice presidential candidates Tim Walz and J.D. Vance meet in New York to debate on Tuesday night. Unstated but implicit in almost all mainstream follow-on reporting and commentary, argues Brian Buettler in his off-message newsletter today, is the fact that CBS made this decision to appease the Trump-Vance campaign. Democrats have generally gone with the flow of candidate debates, leaving the ref working to social media users. But Donald Trump, by contrast, has praised CNN and its moderators for letting his lies go uncorrected when he debated Joe Biden and attacked ABC News and its moderators for correcting a handful of the most egregious lies that he told when he debated Kamala Harris. The CBS decision, notes Buettler, is in reality a decision to let Vance derail the debate, leaving Walz a Hobson's choice between actually debating and responding to smears. The unfolding of an undercard debate isn't terribly important in and of itself, argues Buettler. And I'm not sure he's right about that, by the way, given the lack of debates this year between the two camps and the historic unfavorability for J.D. Vance, for the Republican candidate. But Buettler correctly notes that CBS's decision is mostly significant as an indication of how powerful institutions will bend to Trump should he win the presidency. Many, he notes, are bending already when the guy actually has no official power and is largely behind in the polls. Kind of creepy, if you ask me. Got thoughts on Tuesday's upcoming Walz-Vance vice presidential debate? Do you plan to watch? What do you expect to see? Who do you expect to win, if winning is a thing that can be done in these debates? What do you hope to see? What would you like to hear from the candidates if you're still an undecided voter? Is there anything you might hear that might change the way you currently plan to vote if you are not an undecided voter? Would love to hear from Republicans, Democrats, anyone in between or outside as well. 818-985-5735. Let's go to James in Venice. That would be Venice, California. Hey, James, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, Brad. I'm not going to make any predictions, but I am so optimistic about Walz's performance that I can't hardly stand it. I don't think KPFK is carrying the debate. For anybody else that wants to listen on the radio, it'll be on KCRW at 6. I've got
and
to mention why I called.
Let me mention, by the way, okay, yeah. So that's 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's 9 p.m. Eastern time, since we're on a lot of stations. I don't know if our flagship station here in L.A., KPFK, is going to be running it. Wendell, do you have any idea if we are running that debate live or not? Don't know. We don't know. I hope we are. But there you go. If you want to watch it, 6 p.m. On the West Coast, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. Press on, James.
Yeah.
My apologies.
I'm strictly listening to it, and I just heard about a completely damning expose about Donald Trump, a film called The Apprentice.
Yes.
And I was wondering, it's not been picked up by major studios. Mm-hmm. It's probably will be a fairly small film. What do you think about the Democrats buying the rights and showing it all over Michigan for folks?
Well, why Michigan?
I heard that is the key state this time around.
Well, I think there's a lot of key states. If I had to put my money on it, I'd say Pennsylvania, possibly Georgia. But in any event, as I understand it, actually, the film will get distributed. The Team Trump worked very, very hard to keep that film from getting a distributor, from being distributed in the U.S. They threatened, essentially, distributors if anybody allowed it to get out. It has Sebastian Stan playing, if you're an MCU fan, Sebastian Stan was Bucky, the character Bucky, Winter Soldier. Anyway, he plays Donald Trump in this. And apparently it is about the years that Donald Trump spent being an apprentice to the sleazy attorney Roy Cohn. I don't know that the Democratic Party is actually going to pay to distribute this thing, but because I do think there's already a distributor out there, whether it gets wide distribution or not, I don't know. But I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Wrote Roy Cohn in the film absolutely tears Donald Trump apart. That is part of the film. They're no longer speaking.
Something has torn that man apart. Thanks, yes. James. I appreciate the call. Enjoy the debate no matter where you listen to it. 818.
With my opinion.
All right. Very good. Okay. Thank you. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Dave in Venice Beach. Dave, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi.
Hey, Dave.
How are you, Brad?
I'm okay. How are you, Dave?
I'm fine.
Good.
I'm going to vote non-committed on Kamala, I think.
Yeah.
Unless we hear something about a ceasefire because we're entering a new phase in the war there and it's just out of control.
You're in California. Do we have I don't think we have non-committed on the ballot, Dave.
I write it in like I did for Joe Biden.
I see. Okay. You wrote in Joe Biden?
No, I wrote in non-committed, and I wrote ceasefire,
but
it didn't fit within all the spaces.
All right. And do you have any concern that not voting in this case, not voting for Kamala Harris, who do you think will be better for your concerns in Israel and in the Middle East,
Kamala Harris or Donald Trump?
I'm
hoping that Donald Trump will be soundly defeated, but I can't give my vote. A matter of conscience.
Okay, fair enough. I have mentioned this to other callers in recent weeks that this is going to come down to. We've been covering in great detail. This is going to come down to a fight. If Donald Trump does not win on November 5th, he is going to pretend that this election was stolen from him, whether he has evidence to support that or not. And there's going to be a fight, and it's going to go all the way to January 6th. And I have made the case for people considering voting third party or staying home that if you care about the Middle East, if you think Donald Trump should be defeated, that even if you live in a state like California, which is obviously almost certainly going to go to the Democrats anyway, that running up the tally, running up the score, so that Donald Trump has to fight against having lost by millions of votes, 3, 4, 5, 10 million votes or more, to make it clear who it was that America wants. Now, we don't have popular votes in this country, so in one sense, it doesn't really matter. But in the court of public opinion, and when the Republicans go out and begin to lie about 2024 the way they lied about 2020, I would argue that staying home, I would argue that voting uncommitted only serves to help Donald Trump. I will support you doing it if that's what you want to do, and I will fight for your right to do it, and I will fight to make sure your vote is counted as cast. But I think that's something important to keep in mind, at least this year.
I also would like to jump in and say that I think that people should be aware that Donald Trump has expressed zero interest in doing anything that helps the Palestinians in Gaza. His main focus seems to be that he will give Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu all of the free rein and money and bombs that he needs to finish the job, I think is what he
said. As AOC said not too long ago, I would rather organize against, at the time I think it was Joe Biden, but would rather organize against a Biden-Harris administration than organize against a Trump-Vance administration who will give free rein to Israel to do whatever the hell they want, including flattening every single inch of Gaza and building it back as a seaside resort. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Michelle in Santa Barbara. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey. Just one thing I do want to say about people that can't vote, and I understand about the reasons with the war. It's horrendous and all that. I can understand that. But most of the time I notice that it's a man saying it because women have so much to lose if Trump wins. Mm. The other thing is, I was hoping that Buttigieg
Hang on. Let me ask you. So you're saying that you usually hear a man talking about.
I know there's women that also, and I understand it's horrible, this war. I get it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a whole bunch of us that are women in this country that are going to be losing our rights if Project 2025 comes on.
Yep.
You know, how's that going to help anything in the world? It's not.
Yep.
It's going to disenfranchise half the country.
Gotcha.
And, you know, I was hoping that Buttigieg was going to help out Walz, you know, for the debate, because, you know, supposedly he's not a good debater, Walz. And I guess he is, which I'm thrilled, because we know that J.D. is going to do his walk-around, talk-around that he always does, you know, when he's being interviewed or debated. So hopefully Walz is going to learn something about that from Buttigieg.
Okay.
I'm hoping.
Okay.
And so I'm just expecting Vance to be that usual and Walz just to be his straightforward, straight shooting self.
Well, I will say this.
I
will say this, Michelle. Yeah, I do think it will be interesting. I went back over the weekend and looked at some of the old debates that J.D. Vance actually had only one debate against a Democrat when he was running for U.S. Senate. That was his first time. He's only been in public office for 2 years. I looked at part of that, and I looked at a couple of debates done by Tim Walz when he was running for governor and then running for re-election for governor in Minnesota. They are both pretty good at this, and I think a lot of people may be underestimating J.D. Vance because he is so unlikable. He has historic unfavorability ratings. But, you know, remember, he went to, you know, Yale Law School.
Oh, yeah.
He's
I'm not underestimating him. I just know that he does that typical thing that a lot of these people do on the right, you know, starting with Sarah Palin, you know, the gotcha, all that.
Where they make up stuff and nonsense? Yeah, that's probably what they do. Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Enjoy the show. 818-985-KPFK, let me go to Marlene in Valley Village. Hey, Marlene, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to address the gentleman about the saying about his conscience, and I feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't advise anybody to stay home. I really admire people in the swing states who are going to maybe have to hold their nose and vote for the Democrats, because I find it so offensive, this whole business with the campaign and the Democrats not talking about Palestine and what's going on and in Lebanon. And so I'm not even going to watch MSNBC anymore. I'm fed up with the whole story.
Okay. We got it dumped because she said something we can't say on FCC radio, which is, I'm sorry, Marlene, because I wanted to ask. I was a little unclear what she was actually trying to say. She seemed to be saying that she wasn't happy about it, but she thought it was necessary to vote for the Democrat. I can't tell. Anybody got a read on that?
It was a little difficult for me to understand her as well when I was speaking with her before she went on
air. Or was she saying don't vote for third party?
She made it sound like she was saying if you're in a swing state, don't vote third party, although, you know, it because of the risk to, you know, to the Palestine and to the folks in Gaza, because if Trump wins, then they don't have a future.
Just a friendly reminder, we are on FCC Radio, 818-985-KPFK. We're not going to dump you for your opinions, but we have to, you know, for that reason I mentioned. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Kip in Costa Mesa. Hey, Kip, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Oh, Kip? Oh, we lost Kip. Let me go to Mike in Liana Valley. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, that's correct.
Hey, Mike, is it Lena Valley or Liana Valley?
No, Liana. LeonaValley.
Liana.
Palmdale.
All right. Oh, very good. Hey, Mike.
Out near Lake Elizabeth.
Okay. Well, I just
wanted to say that it's hard for me to stomach voting for either one of those candidates because. Through the years, they've proved to be hypocrites, both parties. So I'm definitely going to vote third party. And I'm never going to change my mind until I see government that's decent here in America.
What do you find hypocritical about, I'll take your pick, which party you want to talk about, the Democrats in this case?
Yeah, if you look at the Democrats through the years, the last 100 years, they've had a pretty good domestic policy, but a terrible foreign policy. And I look at that and I'm saying, my Christian values, I say, do unto others as they do, you should do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as being hypocritical.
Okay.
Of a non-citizen.
Okay.
We're all world citizens, the way that I look at life.
So Democrats are coming down on non-citizens, is what you're saying? More so than Republicans?
Well, no. I mean, the policies of domestic policy, say, for social programs and all this, and most of the outward out of the continental United States is a war situation, the old imperialist society that we inherited from, I guess, from the Romans, I guess.
Okay.
Because we have a Senate, and we have a Senate in a system similar to theirs. So I consider the United States just another extension of Rome.
Oh, okay. And that's, I guess, true for both Democrats and both the Democratic and the Republican Party, as you see it?
I think so. I think generally.
Okay. Do you think it's important? Do you think it's important to support our Democratic allies in places like Ukraine to prevent Russia from moving beyond Ukraine, attacking a NATO country, which then drags us into World War III?
I'm not really sure about that. The only thing that I would think in as regard to the situation there would be if Trump came in, maybe we won't have a nuclear war with the Russians. But remember, as bad as they are, they got nuclear weapons too, and you have to, the first primary problem is the fact that the world has nuclear weapons and they have probably equal weapons to ours. So you don't want to start a nuclear war to destroy the whole chess game.
You don't.
That's the way I look.
Well, you don't. Right. And you also don't want to send out the message that, hey, if you have nuclear weapons, you are free to invade anywhere you want, right?
Well, no. No one should have that right at all.
Well, a lot of people are making the argument that we can't do anything about Russia because, hey, they got nuclear weapons, which, you know, to me sends the message to North Korea. Hey, you want to invade South Korea? Go ahead. Take what you can get. You got nuclear weapons, so we're not going to stop you. We're going to have to make you both sit down and decide how much of South Korea that will now be North Korea.
Well, you know, that's still a situation. The only thing that I'm saying is like what Einstein said about the splitting of the atom, that all things have changed except the mode of man's thought. So what I'm thinking is the people that are sane, supposedly, should try to take control of the governments in every country.
All right. Thank you.
In a non-violent way.
All right. Well, that starts at the ballot box. So consider your vote closely, whoever it may be for. Thanks, Mike. I do appreciate your call. It looks like Marlena called back to apologize. Is that right?
She apologized for her little on-air blooper there and said that she actually does think that people should not vote third party. And she was just trying to say that she feels for people in swing states who are voting third party because, you know, especially those who consider it a vote of conscience, that might be hard for them, but that it's really important not to vote third party.
Gotcha. Let me go to Kip called back, it looks like. Kip in Costa Mesa. Hey, Kip, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for calling back.
Oh, thank you. So You already touched on it, but I just want to emphasize, I don't think people are clear enough on how important fact-checking is. These guys are absolute geniuses at spreading disinformation. Disinformation is the lifeblood of Trumpism. If you allow, if you give these guys a podium like this that's spreading across the world to spread their poison and inject it into their cult, mm-hmm. Without fact-checking, you're basically giving them a couple hundred million dollars, the equivalent of campaign contributions.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that that ought to be the job of the moderators, but it's also the job of the opponent, to the guy who's or woman who is lying, in this case, Tim Walz. So he's going to have to both make the case for himself, and he's going to have to fact check whatever lies J.D. Vance tells. And we know that he tells a lot of them. And by the way, vice versa. If Tim Walz tells lies, then he should be corrected, whether it's by the moderator or by the other candidate. Thanks, Kip. I appreciate that. Let me get to one more call before we get out here, I think. John in Starkville, Mississippi. Hey, John. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, John.
Yes. I was listening to the two callers who called in earlier who wanted to vote their conscience against mm-hmm. the war. And I think it's really important for people who are thinking like that to see that they need to be advocates of ranked choice voting. Because if you're in Maine and you want to vote your conscience, you can, for instance, rank Jill Stein as your first choice mm-hmm. because she's against these forever wars.
And then when Jill Stein does not win the majority, does not win 50%, then her votes, people who voted for her for first place, we look to see who they voted in the second position and distribute the votes that way. Basically, I'm trying to explain how ranked choice voting works, which is very confusing, is very difficult for voters, even though I know there are a lot of advocates for it out there. I'm not one of them, but I wanted people to understand. And for the reasons you explained, John, that would make sense. That said, we don't live in a ranked choice voting world.
Well, the people in Maine do, and another yes. state went ranked choice. And it's important in the example I was given. Mm-hmm. If you put Kamala Harris as your choice number two, and yeah. since Jill Stein does not win, mm-hmm. then at least you have someone that maybe you can pressure to stop the wars in mm-hmm. Israel.
Very and, good. I got to get out, John. You make an excellent point, though, and I appreciate the call, and you're a good advocate for ranked choice voting and offering a good reason why it would make sense, whether I like it or not. We'll get into the reasons for that on another day. I got to get out here. The clock is a hard taskmaster here. My thanks to our engineer, Wendell Handy, to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, along with all of the shows that we do damn near every day of the week. You can drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com and on the Facebooks, Mastodons. And hey, Daniel Sebastian never did call in, did he? He sure had a lot to say about me on Twitter, which I would have shared, but, you know, you could have just called in, Dan. His Twitter handle is Live Life Naked. So what do you expect? Anyway, you can find me on the Twitters and Mastodons and everywhere else. I am The Brad Blog. We'll see you there until we see you here next time. Hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.